This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now here's Mike Penna and Christina McManigal.
Hello again, HRRN Nation, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with retired jockey Christina McManigal, taking the show back on the road again this week as we come to you from Keeneland Racecourse here in beautiful Lexington, Kentucky, right in the heart of the bluegrass. Want to extend a very special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM Channel 206, and everyone tuning in worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Don't forget, you can listen to our live streaming anywhere in the world on your smartphone, your tablet, or your computer. Doesn't matter where you are, you can access us and be able to listen to all of our programming, including tonight and tonight's special guest, which we'll tell you about here in just a moment. But do want to remind our listeners, Christina, that each week a portion of the proceeds from this show are given back to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. And as you well know, as a former rider, that is a cause that we support very heavily here on the network. It's our official charity, and you know how important it really is.
Oh, it's huge, Mike, and glad that we can bring the word out to people about just how important it is.
Yeah, for those athletes that have given our sport so much and are no longer able to do so, you can learn more about helping them at pdjf.org. Looking forward to our special guest here tonight.
I know, Mike, and I have to say I'm spoiled. We were at Saratoga a couple weeks ago, and now here we are in Keeneland and another wonderful guest.
Yeah, looking forward to this visit tonight. And I mentioned listening to the live streaming anywhere in the world. Well, I'm sure there's going to be a few people going to our website to check out the podcast and listening live once we get the word out there on social media that Sophie Doyle is joining us here tonight because she is a native of England. She is enjoying what is by far her best season in the saddle here in the United States, having won 61 races so far in 2015, a total of 68 wins to her credit here in the States alone. Of course, she had that tremendous campaign as the leading female apprentice overseas. We'll talk to her about that and really looking forward to welcoming in Sophie Doyle to train to a Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka tonight. Sophie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much.
I almost made you a trainer there for a minute.
Almost. Could have been.
Well, your mom was a trainer.
Yes, she was. She was. She trained for about 25 years.
Wow.
And bringing my brother and I up alone.
Yeah, and your brother's a jockey, James.
Yeah, right? He's James. He rides for Godolphin in England.
Yeah, your younger brother.
The younger
baby
one.
Baby brother.
Definitely. Taught younger, him everything younger, you know. Younger, but the taller one.
Yeah, how did that happen?
I don't know. My dad's pretty tall. He's 6'2", and my mum's 5'10", and I think I probably got the Scandinavian side of my Norwegian grandmother, who's only 5'4". So that kind of helped.
Good thing for you.
Let's talk about a win that you had this past weekend at Keeneland, arguably the biggest win of your career, and correct me if I'm wrong on that, the Grade 2 Thoroughbred Club of America Stakes, and your first graded stakes winner here in the States. Fioretti was the name of the horse, and we sat right here in this very same location and broadcast the race on the network, and when you came back, you were all smiles, and we talked about that on the show. It was so much fun to see how much that meant to you.
Was.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It was amazing. I was all smiles before the race, never mind after the race. I was honestly very, very confident about this filly running on Saturday. I'd always been high on her since I actually first ever got to ride her back in Churchill on the turf, and I'd always since I won the Rolex Anna on her, I said to Anthony, I said, this is going to be a really smart filly. I really like her. And it's amazing how she'd actually been going all winter. And then suddenly from the springtime onwards, she's really blossomed.
Well, you actually won at Churchill at 25-1.
She did.
That day as well.
And so we were confident that day too. We were really confident. We were really
happy.
Well,
now you have my cell phone number, so when you get confident before these races, feel free to shoot me a text and let me know that you're confident, especially at 25-1.
That's right.
It was huge. It was a big, you know, I think I actually thought the race didn't look too tough, and the way she had been working, we actually brought her here and breezed her one morning because the training center track just wasn't, the weather wasn't playing the right way, so we brought her here for one morning just to give her a half a breeze, and went a half in 47. I just sat back and enjoyed the ride, and I said, wow. I said, we're going to have a big shot. I said, you better have some money on this one.
Wow.
And has she done it in good fashion.
When did you know the race was over and that they weren't going to catch you?
When I crossed the wire. I had the same, I sort of had that same adrenaline rush that I did when I rode her in the groupie door when she finished second, that she led all the way. And I literally, two jumps before the wire, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to win my first graded stakes. And Cool Pat with Joe Rocco just flew past me. They came past me so fast. I was like, I was thinking, where's the photo inquiry? It was that quick. Wow. And when they wasn't, they came back. I was like, oh my God. So to have that feeling, you know, mixed emotions of one minute you're winning, the next minute it's taken away. So this time I kind of kept myself composed and I just kept my head down, kept riding to the wire. And when I looked up and saw no one else was in front of me, then I knew I'd won.
What a great feeling that has to be. And you talked about confidence with your horse going into the race. How important is that, do you feel like, to have that confidence, to have been on the horse before, of course, and to have worked the horse several mornings? How important is that, and how do you adjust your judgment when riding in a race as far as how confident you are with the horse?
I think it's hugely important, especially being on her in the mornings and getting to know her style. I know looking back through her races in the earlier in the year, she was actually pretty keen, pretty tough to ride. You know, she was tough to settle in a race. And one morning Anthony asked me, he said, would you like to breeze her for me and just see how you get along with her? And I said, yeah, I'd love to. And I just instantly got this feeling from her that she wasn't a filly that you could grab her up tight. You just got to trust her, sit back, let her have her head, and give her some confidence too. I think everybody had been kind of riding her a bit too tight in the bit, and it just, she needed to relax. And I came back, and he just said, wow. He said, I've never seen a girl like that for anybody.
Wow.
And I said, well, I just gave her a head and just sat back and relaxed on her and knew that once she knew I wasn't fighting, she just relaxed. So that's really played a key part. And her exercise rider, Michael Heath, he does a fantastic job with her because she's pretty on the muscle in the morning. So there's no easy way of riding her. It's just keeping her as relaxed as you can. And every time she's breezed, I've always been there to get to know her as much as I can. And that's been a key part to this.
You know, I'm very much outnumbered here as the only person who has never ridden a horse in a race. I've been on a horse twice in my life. It scared the daylights out of me both times, by the way. So I don't know how you guys do it at 40 miles an hour whipping around this racetrack. But one thing that stood out to me as you're talking, listening to that story, Sophie, was you said that you just gave her head and let her go. And I've heard that from several other jockeys, that if you fight them too much, you can actually discourage a horse. And even though it looks like you're trying to rate them and save energy for the end, they can actually use more energy fighting you, and then they don't have enough left at the end. Is that true?
It is true. You know, if you've got some horses that are really fighting against you, that they want to go quicker than they do, you know, you're taking that, every stride, you're taking a bit of energy out of them, another breath out of them. You've got to find that key where you've got to find that medium where you're relaxed enough, where he's able to settle and run a race well enough, and you're able to not be pulling too much, but obviously not getting run off with either.
It's a fine line. There's a balance there, right?
Absolutely. And when you stop and think about it, these are 1,200-pound animals, and we're up there at, 110 pounds. And so you're not going to out-muscle these animals. You have to – what we've heard a lot of riders and what I talk about as well is finesse is so important, and your hands and how you communicate with the horse and how – like you said, I loved how you described that, how you give the horse confidence.
Yeah.
And how they can learn to trust you and not just fight against you.
I thought there was a horse, the winner I had on Sunday here with Bad Student. Those were two very different kind of rides, but they're both very tough. They're tough in the sense that Fioretti, she's learned to have some confidence and relax enough, but she's still strong. Like, she takes that one hold and she'll just sit and travel real tight into the bit, and you've just got to keep relaxed as you can. Whereas Bad Student on Sunday, he's used to sitting behind a pace, going a mile, the one turn miles when they're going 22, 46, and he's very strong and keep him covered up. And you're literally just waiting. And he gets very strong. And then here on Sunday, we decided to back him up, and stretch him out, and he went a mile and a 16th. So I was thinking, oh my gosh, how have I gotta find a way to get him to relax enough? And he's not gonna have that fast pace this time. And you can watch in the race, you literally see me just keep pulling, because he just, 1 minute he's trying to run off, then he'll relax. And you go, oh, okay. And as soon as I'd relax enough, he'd try and run off again. So you could see me back and forth. And I said, actually, watching the race, I feel like the horse is just looking back at me, laughing and making me thinking, oh, I'm going to keep pulling. Because he was just enjoying himself, and that's how he is. And, you know, we just kept him. I thought, as long as I can keep him as relaxed as I can for long enough, and then literally just after the 3-8 pole, just find my gap and go with him and let him run. And that's what I did. And so, you know, every horse is different, and you've just got to find their way of running and how they're suited to how you can ride them.
That's one of those moments where I so wish we were on TV and not radio, because as Sophie's telling that story, her hands are in a position like she's riding the horse and she's in the race and she's moving back and forth when she's
naturally saying
stop and go, right? And it was really incredible. And so much of being a successful rider is in having those soft and quiet hands, isn't it?
It is indeed. It's something that my mum, Jackie, has taught me my entire life. And I'll tell you a funny story that when I was very young, probably 5 or 6 years old, and she was trying to teach me to keep my hands down and keep them quiet. And of course I couldn't, because I was so young and not used to having the balance. So I was on my pony, and she whipped the bridle off the pony. She smacked it on the backside and sent me flying around the field. And I was crying about it. And she said, came when the pony stopped and came back to her, she says, right, now are you ready to keep your hands still? And she said, if not, you're going again. And
talk about tough love.
My mum was very tough, but you know what? It's done me in good stead that for the rest of my life, I've never forgot it. And I've always tried to keep my hands and have a good feel of a horse and know where you can have, how to be too tough with them or a little bit softer. And, you know, it's just good upbringing, I guess.
Visiting with jockey Sophie Doyle on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Just want to go back to that TCA win for just a minute, because you said that you were all smiles even before the race. Why was that race so important to you, and why did it mean so much?
It meant so much to me, being given that opportunity to ride in a grade two, and a chance that I never had before when I rode in England. And I knew I had to make the best of it. Like, I just felt it was my moment to shine and make something of myself and make my career, and I just had to grab it with both hands. And I thought, I think Fioretti was probably the best horse that I could have ridden in that race for me and for her, that she just gave me so much confidence before the race, the way she was breezing in the morning, the way she had ran her previous races. And, you know, we just worked together. And before the race, I'd gone through the race with a fine toothpick. And I just looked and I said, how is this filly 14-1 right now? And then I looked out as we came out to the track and she's 17-1. And I'm thinking, you know, they really haven't given her any credit for what she's done in her last couple of, just the past couple of races. So I was just really confident. I knew my horse. I knew that I loved our draw. And the way the track had been playing as well, it was perfect.
Yeah, and you beat a filly and mare sprint winner with Judy the Beauty as well, and that had to mean a lot. Do you allow yourself to look ahead 4 weeks from that day, that Saturday, to what might happen indeed if she goes postward in the filly and mare sprint and all things work out the same way? Do you allow yourself to look ahead and think about what that moment would be like for Sophie?
I do. And same as I looked ahead to coming into this race on Saturday, I looked ahead at what's going to happen next. And that's why I was just so confident that before the race, I was smiling before I came out, because I'd just done my homework and I'd gone through everything. I knew I was confident, knew my horse, I was happy. And I knew straight afterwards, I was like, wow, I'm actually going to be going to the Breeders' Cup now. Now what do we do?
Talk about making a name for yourself.
The only thing I could think of is, well, you just got to be more confident.
It's a good attitude to have going into the Breeders' Cup.
Do jockeys get nervous before a big race? Do you get butterflies?
I would say this one, I don't get nervous in the fact of, oh my God, what if I make a mistake? What if something happens and also, or the race doesn't plan out how I think it is? I get nervous in the fact that, oh my God, I've got this opportunity. Like, and just coming out there, all eyes are on you. And, you know, and the same as when you win the race and you come back and everyone's cheering at you. I get butterflies in my stomach in a good sense. But the second I get on the horse, I forget about everything.
Yeah.
I forget what anybody had said to me. It's just me and my horse, and I just get in that zone, and that's how it is.
That zone, I use that term a lot. How no matter what kind of race it might be, and I would always put a lot of pressure on myself when I would go to ride big races, because like you just said, it's your moment to shine. You really just, mm-hmm. you want to go out and prove yourself. And as you said as well, when you get on that horse, however, it's just, you're in that zone,
yeah,
as you use
absolutely.
The term, and it's just all about the horse, and you're just so focused on your animal and the race that you're going to be riding. So I like the way you phrase that.
Exactly.
Who was the first person to call or text you after the race?
The first person to actually text me after the race was Dave Meir, a friend of mine who's an English friend, and he's in California.
Yeah.
He texted me. He was the first one to text me, and then the first thing I done with my phone was I got straight onto FaceTime with my family, and FaceTime my mum and my brother, and they were there
in the jocks room.
Yeah,
oh, that's great.
Straight away, that was the first thing. Because
were they watching the race in England?
They were indeed. They were. They were sat watching the race, and actually, my brother's girlfriend, Sammy Kettle, she was watching the race from Dubai on Skype. So she was in. She goes to school in Dubai, so she was waiting up all night for the race to come on, and then she was Skyping my brother, and then she was sitting waiting to watch the race, and then I was doing. I did an interview without the races back in England. And she stayed up to wait to listen to that being broadcasted as well and on TV. So she went to bed at like 2 in the morning in Dubai.
Wow.
So I had the whole family watching, and it was great.
Yeah, it is outstanding.
Fantastic. That's fantastic. So when you get to a moment like this, you kind of have to look back and see how far you've come. Obviously, you've come across to the United States, and just what a, I guess, a long journey it's been. Mm-hmm. But has to be so satisfying to look back and see all that you've accomplished and how well you are doing, and so kind of take us back to the beginning, I suppose. Take us back to growing up with your mom, the trainer, and how you first decided you wanted to do this.
Gosh, I think I first decided to do that when my mom gave me a rocking horse.
Really?
My mom gave me, they bought me a rocking horse, and she said every it used to be back in England, Channel 4 racing was only on a Saturday to broadcast the racing. So she said Saturday morning it would come around, and I'd pull my rocking horse in, and I'd go in her closet where all the silks were, and I'd pull out a racing set of silks and get on my horse and start riding races to them.
That's awesome.
Wow.
I've had ponies all my life, and my brother and I, from a very young age, we were always racing them around the paddocks, and you know, that's where it probably really began.
Who's the better rider, you or your brother?
Oh, me, definitely.
she's close big call, sis. Though, she taught
close.
Him everything she knows, right?
Yeah, exactly. we've been very fortunate that our mum and our dad actually had horses when we were younger, and we were able to have that opportunity of, you know, we had ponies from a very young age. I had my first pony from when I was 2. And I actually used to do showing. I used to do show ponies with my mum. My brother tried to do it, but he didn't like it too much.
He didn't care for it.
No, not at all. He didn't like it very much. I think the first show my mum took him in, because he didn't win, he just cried his eyes out. Mum said, "That's it. I'm never taking him again." And so James has just really been into the racing, whereas I did the show in the show jumping to begin with for a while. My mum actually really wanted me to go and be a show jumper. She was really pushing hard. And when it come round to Christmas time, she would always buy my brother all the racing gear. You know, he bought him his first racing saddle, his first set of racing breeches, you know, his first racing top. And I'd come to opening up my presents, and it was a show jumping jacket, a show jumping shirt, show job. It was show jumpers. I'm like, Mum, I want to go and ride races. I can't ride races with this gear. What am I going to do? So it was fun coming up.
It's a great story. Sophie Doyle here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So did your parents go along with the idea of the two kids being jockeys? Did they like that?
They kind of did and didn't. My mum really, really pushed for me to go and be a show jumper. She really didn't want me to be a jockey. And she kind of said to me, well, I didn't think you really wanted to. She said, I thought you were, you know, you liked it, but I didn't know how much you really wanted to do it. And my dad actually would probably wish that I was never been a jockey and had been sensible and had an office job and worked 9 to 5 and had a good living my whole life and just been a normal person. But I think being a jockey, there's no part of you that's normal, that's for sure. So
That's the truest statement that's ever been said on Jock Talk, and I'm glad that she said it and I didn't have to.
I have to agree with her, actually. Yeah. I have to say that is about, yes, definitely a true statement there. Definitely,
that is for sure.
I always kid around, you know. I mean, we're obviously not completely right in the head, given that we want to race around there going 40 miles an hour and starve ourselves and endure injuries and all of that for what we do, but when you love it, you love it.
Exactly. And there's not really anything you can do. And if you know in your heart that is what you want to do and you love that game, then you're going to do it no matter what anybody tells you.
Absolutely.
How'd your brother first get involved with riding races then?
Just exactly the same way. I mean, my brother and I, we started actually, we used to take our ponies as well up onto the gallops at home. We don't have racetracks like this in England to work on. We call them gallops, where they're a lot more, they're in more of a straight line. And it's one end, you start at one end and you finish at the other end in a straight line.
Yeah.
So my brother and I, when we were young, we used to take the ponies up onto the gallops out with my mum's string of horses. And we used to work them with the horses. Or if my mum was breezing, this was the best thing. we would wait till she was going to go the last quarter. And of course it was the fastest part she was going to be going, but we used to wait up there with the ponies. So we'd start racing along, so then she'd come and join us and of course just fly past us at the end, but we thought it was fantastic. And then I think from the age of 11 is when my brother and I both started riding the racehorses out for her. I think all her exercises riders weren't probably happy because we put them out of jobs because we started galloping them and she didn't need to pay anyone anymore. So she was very happy.
Well, Christina, you referenced earlier the things that Sophie has had to overcome in her career, and we're going to get to some of those things here in the next little bit. But your brother also had some things that he had to overcome. As you mentioned, he's bigger than you, which, number one, being a jockey and being a big person is not ideal. And he didn't want to be a steeplechase jockey. He never wanted to do that. No. And there was a time 4 or 5 years ago where he actually applied for plumbing school, didn't
he? Yes, he did. He did.
That's a big difference from being a jockey.
It's amazing how he hates this story being talked about. But I said, James, this is your story. This is your life and how your career has, how it's been made. And I said, you shouldn't ever think, oh, because I was going to be a plumber, look ashamed about it. I said, because that's how this game is and that's how your story and your life has revolved. But, you know, he'd been successful. He was in the running to be champion apprentice. And I think he ended up Julian second.
And he had a big lead with about 10 days to go. I read that somewhere, right? And that had to be heartbreaking for him to not get that title.
Adam Kirby and James both, I think they both were second in the title. So he joined it, they started their jockey career together back when they were in the racing school.
Yeah.
So that was nice for them to be grow up together and to do it together. I'm sure one of them wished they were in the first place, but, you know, that's how it goes sometimes.
There was a statement that I read about your brother where it said that he was almost too good too soon. Is that possible?
In England, that's how they say, if you ride your claim out too soon or you were too good too soon. But then if you have your bug for, if you have your apprentice or your bug for too long, they say, oh, well, they obviously weren't good enough. Oh, it took them a long time to ride their claim out. So there's never really a good way or a bad way of doing it. You've just, if that's the way it works out, it does. And, you know, James had his apprentice for 2 years. So that was a long time to claim for, you know, for an apprentice to have their license that long. And I thought James did his career the right way. But just like any time when you, as soon as you ride out your bug, it takes a long time to really get established and get going again, because everybody uses you for your claim and things are all a whirlwind, going great. And then you need to be in a stable that's going to carry you on from there.
Now, obviously you did very well with your apprenticeship. You were the champion female in England. Now, yeah, that sounds all completely foreign to me how you describe that, because in the United States, it's a little bit different. How does that apprenticeship work in England as far as timing and...
Actually, the leading female rider title came up when two jockeys got killed in a house fire. It was Jan Wilson. She was an apprentice, and she had just been started riding, and she was one of them that's got suffered in the house fire, and she lost her life, unfortunately. So since then, her mother wanted to do something about it and to promote female jockeys. So they said, what about, why don't we have a leading female apprentice series in the Jan Wilson Memorial? So that's what we did, and that's how the title came up. It's not, you know, I think anywhere in America and England, it's not, or in France, there isn't a, unless it's unless you're in an amateur, you know, you have leading amateur, female amateur. They wanted to do something to immemorable for her, and so it helps female jockeys and it helps to highlight, because, you know, it's something that I've got in my career now that everybody can talk about.
Were you the first? Yeah, were you the first recipient of that award?
Yes, I was. Actually, I was.
Well, quite an honor.
I was the first one, and I actually, when they gave me a nice black jacket with a Jan Wilson badge, and that year was my first trip to America, and I wore that jacket everywhere, and I took pictures with her. I even had my picture taken with Senyata as well, with her jacket, and I sent her mum the pictures, and I said, look where Jan's been.
Wow, quite a story. Mm-hmm. Sophie Doyle here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. We're going to continue this visit in the second half of the program. Stay with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz, and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word JOCKEY to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word JOCKEY to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. First, let's head to the West Coast, where Gary Stevens had another big week at Santa Anita. On Saturday, Stevens won the Eddie D aboard No Silent and the Swing Time Stakes aboard Alexis Tangier. Stevens had a solid week by winning 33% and coming in the money on 67% of his mounts. For the week, Stevens finished with 3 wins, 1 second, and 2 third-place finishes. Joe Talamo had a strong week on the East and West Coast as he took the Kelso Handicap at Belmont aboard Appealing Tail and the L.A. Woman Stakes at Santa Anita aboard Ben's Duchess. Talamo won 36% and finished in the money on 64% of his mounts. For the week, Talamo finished with 4 wins, 1 second, and 2 third-place finishes. Julian Leperoux had a strong start to the Keeneland Fall Meet, highlighted by wins in the First Lady Stakes aboard Teppan and the Dixiana Bourbon aboard Aeroforce. Leperoux won 31% and came in the money on 54% of his mounts. For the week, Julian finished with 4 wins, 1 second, and 1 third for earnings of $531,364. Finally, Irad Ortiz Jr. earned the Jockeys Guild Jockey of the Week award by winning 2 different Grade 1 stakes at 2 different tracks. He started the weekend with a win in the Grade 1 Flower Bowl at Belmont aboard Stephanie's Kitten. Irad then traveled to Keeneland on Sunday, where he won the Judmont Spinster aboard Got Lucky. For the week, Ortiz finished in the money on 54% of his mounts for earnings of $1,185,715. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit jockeytalk360.com or follow us on Twitter at Jockey Talk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Judy the Beauty is third toward the inside, 3 lengths off the lead. Fioretti goes fourth. Sweet Whiskey is fifth between horses. And then, Hey Kitty, 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 Kitty moves up on the outside, out in the center of the racetrack. It's wide open. Lee Court has the lead. Judy the Beauty crying out for room is trapped down toward the rail. Here's Fioretti down the center of the racetrack. And also, Hey Kitty, 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 who comes charging up on the outside. Hey Kitty, Kitty, Kitty chasing Fioretti. Now Judy the Beauty has an opening, but the wire's coming. Fioretti with the lead. Fioretti springs the upset for Sophie Doyle in the Thoroughbred Club of America.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pennant, Christina McManigal, continuing our visit with jockey Sophie Doyle. We are positioned above the finish line here at Keeneland in Lexington, Kentucky, in a gorgeous setting for this show and for all of our programming throughout the meet. Don't forget to visit horseracingradio.net for a complete Road to the Breeders' Cup and Breeders' Cup Week schedule as we bring you all that coverage here on HRRN. Also, don't forget to check out our website for podcasts of this show and all of our shows. They're all available for you, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes, so you can listen anytime, download them, listen at your leisure, whatever it might be. And it's amazing, Christina, how many people are actually going back, listening to these shows on podcast. We get countless emails and responses on social media about how many people are enjoying the programs like that. And no doubt tonight's show will be very popular as well.
Of course. England, Dubai, she was just mentioning everyone who was listening, watching the race. So tell them all to check out the podcast.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we just heard that clip of Fioretti winning the Thoroughbred Club of America Stakes this past weekend at Keeneland. And Sophie, we started off looking back on that race and you talking about how much it meant to you. And now that we hear a little bit of your background and that story, it's easy to see why that meant so much to you, because you had to work so hard to get to this point.
Oh, absolutely. I've always, even when I was growing up, I've always had a job. I always worked in the morning. I was always breezing for people every single day. And my brother used to say to me, why do you like getting up in the morning, having to go to work somewhere every morning? I said, well, because I enjoy it. I love getting up in the morning and going breezing horses and working. And I've always just had a very good work ethic about me, that I like to get up in the morning and go do something. You know, on days that you, if you sit around for too long, you just end up doing nothing all day. And the way the racing game is in England, you can't just sit back and expect your career to kind of hold you and pay your way in the world. And it doesn't work like that in England. You have to really keep working. I think unless you get the opportunities and you're very successful, then you could be like my brother and, you know, take the morning, some mornings off and just go racing. Whereas I've never been able to do that. And I think I've also liked working because it's kept me fit and it's kept me strong.
Yeah. Yeah. How much different is riding races here in the United States as opposed to back in England?
It's very different. And something I learned, which actually something new that I learned recently was when I rode back at Kentucky Downs, and the way the horses get across the ground, cover the ground differently, the way their body and their momentum changes. The first couple of days I rode at Kentucky Downs, my body ached from top to bottom. Like my
really?
Legs
and
hurt,
fit.
And I'm fit, and I've been fit. I've ridden over 500 races this year, and I was like, oh my God, why is my body hurt? But it's because the horses' bodies are moving up and down. You know, you've got the undulation of going up and down, and they're changing their leads because they're not used to taking such a long turn around the bend. So they kind of go back and forth on their lead changes, and it's just finding your horse comfortable, and you've obviously, you've got to help them along a little bit more. Whereas when you're riding on the dirt here or on the turf course at any of the tracks, they're so flat and even that you basically got to keep your body just as still as possible. And it's a lot easier to, I'd say it's a lot, your body keeps in one position a lot easier. Whereas in when you're riding up and down the hills and back in England, you have to change, your dimension changes, the feel of the track on the turf changes, and that's what I felt at Kentucky Downs.
That's a good workout, for sure, a
Definitely.
Good workout. How about, now of course, to the onlooker, the people who are wagering on the races, and they see a jockey coming from England, and there are notable differences of riding the stretch, turning for home, as far as a jockey's riding style. Did you change that at all when you came over?
Absolutely. I had to change my style. And it's something that I learned back in California, that style is everything in America. And when I started riding there, I found it very difficult. And it is because of, you know, it's one of the prestigious tracks to ride at. But looking back on my career now throughout this year, I can understand and appreciate why it was so difficult. And I had to change my style because of it. That was the big key, that I had to go somewhere and just practice changing my style and getting my seat differently, sitting my body in a different position. And just basically I thought to myself, if I can get the base of my body stronger and fitter, then it will help to be able to change my body style and the style that I ride in. I think it's very difficult when you've ridden races for 7 years to suddenly start changing and trying to adapt your body into another mold of riding style. And it's taken me a while. And now I think in the last 5 months, my body's actually started changing. Just the shape of my body, the muscles are working differently and working a lot better. And I think that's really helped throughout this year.
Was that a difficult adjustment to make?
It was, because I had to really think about it a lot more. You think, oh, it would just come naturally, you'd be able to do it and get the flow of it, but you didn't, because your body was used to riding in one direction for so long, it was like second nature to you, so you would do it automatically. So then you've got to start changing your style, not letting your backside hit the saddle. You've got to sit more still in the saddle and keep your shoulders down lower and keeping your hands up higher when you're running down the stretch. So you had to think a lot more. I actually took myself, when I left California in 2014 in February, and I went to Oakland for 2 months and I worked for Callan Gorder, where his assistant John Ortiz actually taught me a lot. And when we'd be raising horses together, he'd be shouting at me down the lane, get your knees open, get your chest down, get your hands up higher. And that really stuck in my mind when I was riding races. For the first couple of races that I had to keep thinking about that. Get my knees open, get down lower, get your shoulders down, get your hands up higher, and you know, that really helped.
And not only just, and that's great, I mean, but as well as just going in a different direction sometimes. That just kind of boggles my mind, because your body does, as you said, adjust to when I'm walking and I've been riding. I kind of think that I kind of lean, you know, to the left a little bit, because
that's something that I've noticed it's very different. And I've noticed the thing that I notice about my body that's changed is my right hip. My right hip kills me some days, because you have to kind of ride. And that's the other thing I had to learn about riding the ACDC. I thought it was, oh, that's just an American thing about going around the turns. But it's not. It's when you're coming down the stretch and they switch to that right lead, it level, because they're going lower with the right leg, it brings you level with the left leg a bit more, and you're able to kind of push off them and sustain your body in that position and keep a lot more lower on the horse.
And what she describes there is having the left stirrup or iron just a little bit lower, longer than the right. So you're, when you're in the saddle, your left foot is a little bit lower than the right. But as she describes, when they switch leads, turning for home, kind of adjusts. So you're almost even.
Yeah.
And it helps to go around those turns as well. You can kind of
help. Whereas in England, you want to keep as level as you can, because one minute you could be going left-handed, next minute you'd be going right-handed, you could be going to a figure of eight, or if you're riding at a track called Brighton, which is on a cliff, it's just a straight up and down track with zigzags in the middle. So one minute you're going over to the right, then you're coming back to the left, and then you're coming to the right again, and then you're swinging down the hill, and then you might, depending on the track that day, if it's good ground, you'll stay over on the far side. If it's bad ground and it's soft, you'll switch and come off the hill and you'll drift to the right and come right up onto the stands rail. So you can't really ride that ACDC one leg shorter than the other because the direction changes too much.
See, I could have used this advice on my two trail rides when they said, okay, let's let them trot a little bit. And I was bouncing around just trying to hang on and stay in the saddle. I could have used this advice.
Definitely.
She didn't even hesitate. She just said, yeah, definitely. She knew right away from looking at me. Sophie Doyle here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So what ultimately led to the decision to make that move to the United States?
I actually came to the States. My first ever trip to the States was when I was 19, and I went to Palm Meadows. And it was an ex-boyfriend of mine that was a jockey. He won an apprenticeship series, which gave him a six-week working holiday out in America. And the trainer that offered to be able to let young apprentices come over and work in their stable was Carl Nafgaz with Ian Wilkes. So I actually, I said to him, I said, well, if you're going to America, I said, you're definitely not going without me. His trip was all paid for by the company. So I said, why don't we split it between us, have a 6-week holiday together and both get a good experience. And that's really where I first got the feel of how America is and how different it is out here. And then, of course, I went back to England. I rode for 7 years, and then I spent a couple of winters. I went to Dubai for 2 winters. Then I stayed for 1 winter. And it was just too quiet at that time, so I decided to come back out to America, and I tried that for 3 months of the winter, and
in,
I really
California,
enjoyed it in
right?
California. Yeah, I went to California for 3 months, and I worked there for Jim Cassidy, and that was, I think that was back in 2011, was it?
I love Jim Cassidy.
Yeah. I had 2011, and Jim actually asked me, he said, if you want to stay an extra month, I'd give you a chance, I'll give you a ride. And I said, well, yeah, definitely, I'd love to. So I had 2 rides out there that year, and it was a good experience because I think it kind of put the foot in of what I wanted to do. So I went back home, I carried on for that next season, and it was just really, really tough. It got really tough back home, so I decided to come back out in the next winter, and I said, you know, I'm just going to come out and get my foot in the door with people. And I knew then, I said, I want to leave. I know I want to come out to America.
Yeah, I've read a few articles, Sophie, as far as your opinion on England versus American riding and how females are treated, female jockeys are treated a little bit, it's more difficult to get ahead in England if you're a female rider. Is that true?
Absolutely. I think the recognition that girls get out here in America is brilliant compared to how it is in England, even though as much as the media side really want to try and boost female jockeys, you know, everybody asks the question of why do female jockeys not get the opportunities in England? And my honest response is, well, ask the trainers and the owners. We can't answer that question as well as you'd like us to. You know, go to the source of the problem and ask them, what can females do to get those opportunities, and see what their response is. And I think that would really help. But it's just amazing how there's actually so many female jockeys in England that, you know, we're all trying. We all want to have that, you know, blossoming career in England because it's such a lovely place to ride. But they just don't get the support, unfortunately.
Were there female riders that you looked up to as you were growing up, either in England or here in the United States?
Yes, there was a couple. In England, there was Lisa Jones and Joanna Badger, who she actually moved to the States. And Lisa, when she rode out her claim, she rode in England for another year, and then she left and went and rode in different countries around the world. And also, one of the main people that I watched from a very young age, well, from when her career started blossoming, was Rosina Pravnik. I've actually really looked up to her for a very long time.
Have you had the chance to meet her here in the States?
I did. I've become friends with her now. And when I started riding here in Kentucky, when she came back and was riding here at Keeneland, and then rode at Churchill, was where I first met her. And she was so nice and so helpful. And she actually took me a couple of times on the mechanical horse and offered to help me and got me in that style of, and showed me how my body's supposed to feel when you're riding and how to help yourself and make yourself better on the track.
That's one of the great things about this sport and the profession of being a jockey here in the United States. And we hear this all the time when we do these Jock Talk shows. So many of the experienced riders will help the newer riders that come into the jocks room. And you say, wait a minute now, you're competitors. You're going out there trying to defeat each other in every race and take the purses away from each other so that you can make the money. You're competing. But yet, it's a safety thing where they know that if they can help riders become better, that it helps everybody across the board. Am I looking at that the right way?
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the things that Rosie said herself, that I saw in one of her interviews that she did, and they said about helping jockeys. And she said, the leading riders and the more professional ones, they're there to make sure that when younger riders are coming through, that they're riding safe and protecting themselves, so they do offer to help you. And to be really honest, this is a game where anything could happen. You know, it takes a blink of an eye and somebody could go down, or somebody could make the wrong move in the wrong time. And they just mean you have to be so aware when you're in a race full of horses running around you at speed. And I think it's invaluable to have anybody who's as classy as Rosie is to be out there and to be able to help you and just give you a little key pointers. And I know we're all competitors and we all want to win races, and you know, you want to win one more than the other one does, and but you've got to help each other at the same time.
And I do find that, like you said, we're all competitors. However, jockeys, and typically a group of jockeys at one particular track, all kind of bond together a little bit. But definitely that had to be cool to have looked up to Rosie for so long, and then to be here in the States and riding with her and learning from
it
her.
Was
what
great.
An experience
and
that
you
had
know
to
what?
Be.
When she announced her retirement, I was actually back in England visiting my family in November, and when she announced her retirement, I was gutted. I was like, no. I was just getting to know her, and I was just starting to like have somebody who was competitive to ride against. It was another female rider, and I was thinking I was enjoying it, riding against her, learning from her, and how she'd go through a race, how she'd analyze a race. You know, she really helped a lot and helped my understanding of American racing. And then suddenly she was gone. I was like, oh, God, well now what am I going to do? I guess I have to do it on my own now. But it was just nice to have that, you know, that female competitive there every day that, you know, because now most of the time I'm on my own.
Oh, wait
when
a minute,
I'm riding
wait
a couple of these tracks, I'm
wait
not...
That's not entirely true, because now you can beat up on the boys like
well,
you did
yeah.
this past Saturday, right? And
exactly.
Johnny, Hall of Famer John Velasquez, mm-hmm. Javier Castellano. You can beat up on all the boys
definitely.
Now.
Definitely. And you know, actually, one person that helped me when I was in California was Mike Smith.
Yes.
He helped me out a lot. He took me running up the trails. He took me to the gym, got me a 30-day free pass at his gym, and let me work out with his personal trainer when he was going to... So he taught me a lot about fitness too, about riding here in America, and how seeing how fit and strong he is and what he does to ride at a high level in his career is amazing.
He's a workout freak, isn't
yes,
he?
Yes, he is. He is definitely. And he has a mechanical horse in his garage, or garage as you guys would say. and he has they gave him a Senyata one. So a couple of times he'd let me go in there and work on his mechanical horse, work on Senyata and practice in the morning. So, you know, he helped me. And of course, I was riding against him when he was on Judy the Beauty. And And when he came, when I came back in finally, he said, "I can't believe it." He said, "You know, I looked across at the quarter pole," and he said, "Looked," and he said, "I think," oh, he said, "I think she's got me." I said, "Well, you taught me well, Mike."
What a great thrill!
Yeah.
What a great thrill. Sophie Doyle here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. What can you learn from working on a mechanical horse like that? You mentioned Mike letting you do that in the garage. What can you learn?
Just your fitness and your style, and you know, you just practice hitting the horse differently in the backhand to the forehand, switching sticks back and forth, and just generally practice riding races. And if you're able to, you can pull up races and on the TV and, you know, ride a race along there. And and the best thing I like to do is, if you're able to do that where you can at the jocks room at Churchill, they have actually a fitness room now properly built by Planet Fitness. They put that in last year so the jockeys can go in and work out, and they've got the mechanical horse with the mirrors in front of you and a huge big TV. And what I like to do is go in there before races and pick out, I'll watch a race first and let it run, and then when the replay comes on, I'll ride to how the winner is riding. So I'll watch how the winner's won, how the jockey rode that winner, and then when the replay comes on, I'll then ride and do exactly what he was doing. So that means like pulling the stick through at the same time, hitting the same number of hits that he hit, or whether he was hitting or not. You know, and that, those kind of workouts are different because every jockey rides differently.
But how would you describe your style of riding?
I don't know, really. I actually asked a jockey the other day because he was mentioning about how riding at one track, how he knows how everybody rides a race. And I said to him, "How do you think I ride a race?" And he said, "You ride a race from every direction." He said, "I never know where you're coming from." He said, "I know if I'm in front, I'll look behind me and I'll think, damn, there she is." He says, "And or you, sometimes you can go to the front and you'll ride a race from the front, depending on your type of horse." And I said, "I was thinking you're probably right. I don't have a really, I'm not set in stone how I would always ride, how Sophie Doyle, oh, she always rides from the back, or she always goes to the front, or she's always on the front end and sitting there in a stalking position." I kind of ride all my horses differently. It just depends on the horse, really, for me.
Well, that's a good thing. And that's probably a compliment when somebody says that to you, that you're riding from everywhere, because you don't want to get pigeonholed into being just a speed rider or just a rider that excels on the turf or whatever it might be, right? You want to be able to be versatile.
That's something that when I go through my races, and when I'm at a track like here, or when I was riding at Turfway for the winter, and then I was riding at Belterra for a few weeks, the same when I was riding at Indiana, you go through, and once you start watching the races and you watch every race and you watch how everybody's riding, then when you're able to go through your races, you start looking at, you look at the form of the race, and then what, which jockeys are going to go where, which jockey is going to see that that horse isn't always goes to the lead but never finishes. So you need to know, is he going to keep sending him to the lead, or is he going to do the smart thing and maybe drop him back and wait a bit and realize that, or is he just a jockey that likes to just keep sending them, or is there a jockey that's, even though he's on a speed horse, you know he's going to take him back out of the race and come from behind? So it's good to always get to know your other jockey, the other, their tactics too.
Outside of Rosie, who's the best rider that you get the chance to ride against?
There's a few of them. I would actually probably, honestly say probably Corey Lannery.
Really?
I really enjoy riding against him and following him. I picked up a lot of his tactics.
What makes him so good?
Just at the fact that, you know, watching him ride around Churchill, it's like it doesn't matter what he rides. He always just keeps winning. And I asked him recently, I said, "What is it about riding here that makes you always be leading rider, that gives you that bit more confidence?" And he just said, he said, "Sophie, I could ride around this track with my eyes closed." He said, "I know where every pole is." He said, "I just have a really good vibe here, and I enjoy it."
Sophie, you say about handicapping a race and handicapping the jockeys. Mm-hmm. How do you look at a race before you're going to ride? How do you prepare? How do you study for maybe a horse you've never worked in the morning? How do you do your homework?
The first thing I always like to do, as soon as I know what entries I have, I like to spend time and go through races, pull up some of the their previous races and look at how they were ridden. And, you know, I'll pull up their form alongside them and say, right, this is where they were. But one thing I notice sometimes about the form, and then how the form is ridden to how the race is ran, it doesn't always match up. So it's always good to be able to go back and watch previous races and see how the race was truly run, because one minute they could have been leading, then you could take the horse back out, but it might say that he was still in front for a bit longer than they said. So it's interesting to watch how races ran and how they were ridden each time. You know, which jockey was on the horse the previous time, and how, that's what I was saying about handicapping jockeys as well, is how they rode the horse to how their style fits them. And I think that's a big key to what helps.
You know what always gets me when we talk to these riders is when you hear what they have to go through in terms of being at different tracks on different days. And it could be, I think you were at, what, Thistledown yesterday?
Yeah.
And then here at Keeneland to work a horse today.
And then Indiana this afternoon.
How do you do it? How do you keep up with this frantic schedule and still be on top of your game when you get on a horse in the afternoon?
Because we're not normal. Normal people.
That's the explanation.
That's
for everything.
Yeah.
That sums up Jock Talk. This will be our final Jock Talk program because that sums it up perfectly.
Yeah.
Right?
Not,
I mean,
normal.
Jockeys are a different breed, and that's not an insult. You have to be a special person and a different person to want to be a jockey.
You have to be. You have to be. You have to be very strong mentally. I've always said that this game is not for the weak-minded. That you have to be able to stay on top of your game, and sometimes when things aren't going right, is just take a deep breath, think about things, don't worry too much, and know that if you're doing all the right things, everything will be all right.
And it's also very tough to deal with trainers maybe taking you off horses, because this guy, the agent, came up to pitch for the horse, and so it's hard not to take those kind of situations personally, and you really have to be tough mentally.
Exactly. I think a very good story that elaborates on that is the horse Run Happy, that my friend Erin Walker, who's a 5-pound bug girl, she got to ride him when he won at Indiana and Ellis. And so many people said afterwards, oh gosh, I feel so sorry for Erin that she didn't get to ride the horse going to Saratoga or coming here. And I said, look, I don't feel sorry for her at all. If anything, I'm envious that she got that opportunity to ride a horse like that. I said, if anything, I think it's fantastic for her career. And, you know, when trainer pulls her up and looks back and see what horses she had ridden, to see, oh my God, she rode Run Happy and won 2 races on him. That's fantastic, you know, and I think somebody with her experience, that was, you know, huge for her career to ride a horse of that caliber. And it's very understandable why they would switch to a more professional jockey going into those 2 graded races down in Saratoga and here at Keeneland. And that's very understandable in this game. You know, I would never look at that as a negative. I'd always look at that as a positive, that, wow, I got that opportunity. Look what it did for me, and the fact that I got to ride of that horse of that caliber was amazing.
Sophie, I can't believe that we're just about out of time. It has been such a delight to hear your story, and you are such a breath of fresh air with your outlook, your attitude, your work ethic. I want to wish you all the best moving
Thank
forward,
you very much.
And look forward to seeing you in 4 weeks' time here in the Breeders' Cup. Let's hope
Absolutely.
Everything goes well.
I can't wait. It's going to be fun.
All right. Safe trip on all those horses.
Thank you.
And Sophie Doyle here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. Christina, what can you say? I'm just a fan. I just sit here and listen, and it's just great.
Now I'm going to be cheering for Sophie Doyle come Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, go Fioretti.
I know.
All right. For our producer back in our Lexington studio, that is Lee Delapina. For Christina McManigal, for our special guest, Sophie Doyle, I am Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time right here on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's. Thanks for listening.